Okay, so this interview with Aldo.
I got goosebumps.
I did too.
Yeah.
Not only was he thoughtful about his responses in telling us a story, but he went through basically the journey of being, you know, like he moved to Morocco and then watching his dad have like one single store and the way his father treated, like his dad had a shoe store.
Shoe store.
And the way he treated his employees and his community.
Wants his kids to have stable jobs. Aldo's a natural born salesman.
What I think is so interesting about him in particular is you typically associate chutzpah and ambition with this aggressive, right, winner take all, yeah, doggy dog sort of thing. But actually what Aldo Bensadoun proves is that you can be kind and you can have high integrity, but you can also win. And actually, yeah, he believes that, totally, and there's actually a real correlation between the two. The more kind you are, the more, and therefore, the more you win. The more you win, the bigger you can build, and the bigger you can build, the more impact you can have. And it's this wonderful sort of this cycle of reciprocity, and it's
unbelievable. He talks about this moment in his career where he's at risk of losing a very big deal.
He would give me the equivalent of, you know, of those shares, you know, right, those value. Yeah. But I felt that he had, led me to the wrong direction, and I didn't like his value, basically. Yeah.
And he makes a really chutzpah, gutsy decision that is as much principle-based as it is business-based. I'm not even so sure it was the right decision from a business perspective on the surface.
That's right. Well, actually, there's also opportunities that he talks about where he's about to do something, and it's a good thing from a financial perspective. It's the right thing to do. But there's something about the deal that doesn't feel right to him, and so he walks away from it.
Aldo Bensadoun, what can I say? I'm so excited. This is just such an amazing interview. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom.
Our second episode of Big Shot, as I've said to you when I first contacted you about doing this, David and I have been obsessed with entrepreneurship, and specifically Jewish entrepreneurship. And there's this thing about Jewish entrepreneurship that we love. It's sort of the chutzpah and the audacity. There's something kind of strange about how Jews start businesses and have built great companies. And we think it's partially chutzpah. It's partially, you know, the plight of the Jewish people over thousands of years. But we've wanted to create an archival of Jewish entrepreneurship. And, you know, Aldo, you've been someone that has not only been a great Jewish entrepreneur, but you've sort of really changed the face of retail in many ways. I think, at its peak, Aldo had 3,000 stores in 100 countries, $2 billion in sales. And so we really wanted to have you on. And one thing we thought we'd start with is, your early days, the upbringing.
I was young when I left. Right. We left Morocco when I was about 11 years old. We looked at retail as a really lower level activity in business.
Like not a sophisticated. Not sophisticated.
What? No.
Why was it?
To me, I mean, I'm talking about us in our...
Right. Sure, in your house.
In our house, you know, yeah. Like my... my father and my mother, you know, they were really pushing us, you know, to go to the best school. They hired the best teachers. And I'm the youngest of the family. And basically, my two other teachers were teachers, and my brother was also a teacher. And so me, I would say, no way am I going to go in retail. I don't want to be a failure. You know, I want to... you know, to make my parents proud, and I'm going to be either a teacher or an engineer or a lawyer or something like that.
I mean, it's so ironic, of course, because
exactly.
You changed retail, but you thought it was a lower level thing.
Exactly.
We just had Charles Bronfman on, and we were talking about this concept of entrepreneurship by necessity.
Okay. Yeah.
And whereas your father probably was in retail and was an entrepreneur, not because he was deeply inspired by shoes, but because he had to put food on the table.
Yeah, he had to make money. Yeah.
Exactly.
It was survival.
That's exactly. Exactly. By the age of 11, there was starting to be to have political problem in Morocco, and a lot of the French teachers were moving away from Morocco. So my parents felt that I should go to France in pensionnat, in boarding school. And so I went to Lycée Henri IV in Paris in a boarding school. At Lycée Henri IV, and I studied until I finished the baccalaureate.
In engineering, right? engineering?
No, baccalaureate is basically high school, just end of high school.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. And then by that time, my brother was finishing his PhD at Cornell. And he said, instead of trying to go to a different school in France, why don't you apply at Cornell? So I apply at I apply at Cornell. I was accepted, and I went to study at Cornell. And then, even at that time, I there was how you call it fraternity, Tau Epsilon Phi.
Yeah,
it's a Jewish fraternity at Cornell, so they paid for my meal, my room, everything.
Wow.
So it didn't cost me any money at all.
Did you
Cornell? So now Cornell, I mean, Cornell's of course in Ithaca, New York, right? So it's an Ivy League school, an incredible school.
Yeah.
But did you speak English?
No, I didn't speak English.
You
at
didn't
all.
Speak English?
No. Wait, so, I mean, hardly. I mean, I studied English at school, you know, in Lycée Henri IV,
right.
But I was not, I would take maybe 2 hours, maybe 3-4 hours per week or
right.
something like that.
There's
this, you know?
There's a story in there that we were talking about that we just find fascinating, where you were at one point selling encyclopedias.
No, what happened, so I studied at Cornell for about a year and a half, and at that time, I my sister came to visit me with her husband. And they said, let's go to for the weekend to Montreal. And so I said, fine, I'll go with you. So I came to Montreal, and I loved the city. Everybody was speaking French, English, you know, and I felt much more at home. And I decided to transfer from McGill, from Cornell to McGill. And I went to McGill. If you want. But the story you're talking about,
the
encyclopedia, that's where I learned my English.
Well, it's fascinating. Just to set the stage here for people that are watching, I mean, so you're selling, I mean, so it's encyclopedias, it's door to door.
Yes.
And no English.
And you don't speak English.
No. Well, by then I had been.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
not enough that you were able to be overly articulate charismatic
that's
in
right.
English, right?
Yeah.
Did you sell a lot?
I did.
You did?
Yes, how'd
you,
became how'd the
you
best
it?
One.
Yeah, how'd you do it?
So we would knock at the door, and the idea was basically to tell the people, and you wouldn't go to very expensive area. You would go to working class area.
Why was that?
And you'll understand why. So basically, we would say, okay, fine, I'm here, you know, to sell encyclopedia. What is an encyclopedia? We tell them what it is, and then you know, 9 times out of 10 they would just, you know, bang the door and said, forget it, you know, you go away, you know. But some of them would let us in, and we would make the presentation. We'll explain to them, you know, what an encyclopedia is, and we would say, you see, like, if you want, you know, for your children to be educated and to reach their full potential and be at a higher level, you know, they need to be educated and read and receive every month, you know, a book, you know, from the encyclopedia. And then we would tell them, what is the cost? They would ask us, and we would say, it's less than the cost of a cigarette a day, okay? And so then, they would say, okay, fine, so how much is it really? So we would say, well, it's $1 per day. So they would say, yeah, but how are we going to pay it? And they said, well, you just, you know, we would show them the paper, they would start, you know, filling it up, the address, their name, etc. And then we would say, okay, the total price is $350. But you only have to pay it $1 a day. And at the end of the week, we would come and pick up the $10 and, you know, or $7,
right.
You know, and that's it. So then we would say, since, you know, our price is so low, the only time that we can come is on Sunday. So we will have somebody coming here between 7 in the morning and 9 in the morning to pick up the money, you know, every week. And they would say, oh, no, I don't like that. But they already had made that decision that they wanted to buy it.
Right,
it was just a question of how to do it. The decision was made already, you see? So then we would say, okay, fine, if you don't want us to come every Sunday at 7 o'clock in the morning, you could make some, you know, write us some checks, you know, predate it, and you send it every month. So that's what they would do.
And that's what you wanted anyway.
Exactly, yeah. Because there was nobody coming on the, you know.
There was no collector or anything like that. I mean, basically created the worst payment schedule ever.
Basically, you know, so it was, that was their spread.
So now you're back in Montreal, you finished school. You don't want to be a shoe, you don't want to be in the shoe industry because you have generations behind you of cobblers and you don't want to do it, but yet somehow you ended up in the
shoe business. I think what happened is that, you see, like after I finished McGill, being a French citizen, I had to do my military service in France. So I went back to France, did my 2 years, 18 months military service, and then came back and I worked at CIL, not too far from here, you know, on René Lévesque and university. And so I worked there for 2 years.
What did you do there?
A market research analyst.
Okay.
So, and it was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, so basically at one point, they sent me to a shoe company. Mm-hmm. And that shoe company had a problem in... had a problem in shipping their goods from the warehouse to their store.
And you were a consultant sent in to try to understand that.
Yeah, okay. And so I looked at their problem and I came up with a very pretty good way of doing it, of working. And the owner was extremely happy about it. And he told me, he said, why don't you come and work for me? Mm-hmm. So I you know, came back, I called my mother and my dad, and my mother said, no, you shouldn't, you know, CIL is a very big company, you should stay there. You know, you're going to get a pension and you'll be able, you know, to have a good life. Don't go and work for, you know, a small company. So the...
Was the issue also that it was a shoe company, do you think? Do you think that she didn't want you to go because it felt like retail
to her? No, it was just because of the size and, you know, the insecurity, basically. Right. And, you know, so they... but then the owner of that company... offered me like three times the salary that I was going to have. Plus, he really told me, you know, he said, why don't you come and work? And I said, well, I'm going to be one day the president of CIL. So he said, what? He said, Aldo, you're a dreamer. There is no way you'll be the president of CIL. You know, your name is Ben Sedun, you're a Jew, and look at the Bank of Royal Bank of Canada, look at all the big company, you don't see...
There's no Jews.
Yeah. There's no Jews is not like president.
Yeah.
And I said, you'll see. At the end, I accepted to go and work for him. And so I worked there for 7 years, basically. Six, 7 years. And he was fantastic because he told me that he had full confidence in me. He set me up in an office that was away from where he was working. I had different places, and he had given me certain conditions to attract me, saying that if you I don't know if that part, you know, I should talk about that.
You don't have to use names.
So, you know, basically, like, he gave me all kind of excellent condition, and he said, if you can reach that level, I will give you 5% equity in the company.
You become an owner.
And I would become an owner. And I really worked very, very, very hard, and I enjoyed every single minute, and I learned an awful lot from him. And
did he give you the piece of the company?
So then, at one point, you know, my son David was born. I got married. Yeah. I felt good. You know, like everything was going well. I moved in a place. Could you imagine? I moved in a place where you had a doorman.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you were a big shot.
You were a big shot.
And, the doorman's definitely big shot.
And so I moved there. And I'm sure you know the place. It's Fairway House,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
on Côte Saint-Luc Road.
Yeah.
And it was just built, and it was a beautiful place. And then my son, David, was born. And I said, well, I better be serious now, you know, and go back and transfer, those shares. So I went back to him. And he said, look, I'm sorry, I changed my mind. I don't want to have my son have a partner. And I would, you know, I'd rather, you know, I will double your salary and please stay. And I, you know, I was devastated and I said, no, I don't want to stay. And I basically left. And
even though he was giving you a lot of money,
even though he was giving me two or three times even
that
he didn't keep his word,
he would give me the equivalent of, you know, of those shares, you know,
right.
those value. Yeah. But I felt that he had, you know, led me to the wrong direction, and I didn't like his value basically. Yeah.
You know, one of the things, in anticipation of this interview, Dave and I spoke to people who know you well. Norm Jaskolka, Robert Oppenheim.
Yeah.
And one thing they all say is that the way that you run your business is with incredible integrity.
Yeah.
And in this moment, you felt something didn't connect, right?
Yeah, it was bigger than the money.
That's right. Yeah. It was, as you say, bigger than the money.
So you're there.
So then at that point, I said to myself, I said, I better, you know, what am I going to do? So I went to see a lawyer, Peter Mandel. And
Jewish lawyer.
A Jewish lawyer at David.
Are there any other kinds?
And I explained to him, you know, the case. And Peter gave me the best advice. And he said, look, Aldo, you know, there is no point for you to sue him or anything like that. You better settle, because he has so much more money than you that he's going to drag you in court for years and years and forget it. He said, so I went back to him and I said, look, that's fine, I'm going to leave. And then I asked him, I said, is it possible that I have bought from you a company on his behalf? I had bought a new company called Castle Shoe.
Okay.
And I said, so then I'm getting closer to your family.
Yeah.
So I had bought Castle Shoe that had the right to sell shoe within Le Chateau.
Okay. Yeah.
You see? And so basically he said to me, okay, fine. I will sell it to you. And I said, how much? And he said, well, how much did you pay on my behalf? Mm-hmm. He didn't know.
He didn't know.
So I told him, and he said, well, $5,000 more than what you paid. I felt that it was not right.
Yep.
But I said, okay, fine. And I said, yeah, but I don't have any money.
Right.
And he said, okay, I will lend you the money at 6% interest.
Oh, wow.
Generous guy.
Yeah. No, but at the time, it was the level that's basically,
it was prime at that point.
Yeah, kind of. And
when
so
you say a store
what,
within a store, what do you mean by that? What do you mean?
Basically, the what we had is that we had made Le Chateau at that time was run by a very, very nice man called Yvon Goyette.
Yeah.
And Yvon Goyette was the CEO.
Yeah.
And basically he gave me the right to sell shoes within Le Château. So he gave me a space of three shelves.
Right? What? On Saint-Denis, no?
No, on
Saint-Catherine. Saint-Catherine,
yeah.
Okay. So three shelves.
Three shelves, yeah. 6 feet long.
Okay, yeah.
Each one, that's one, two, three. And he said, you can put shoes there, and when people buy them, you have your own cash. I don't want to have anything
wow.
to do.
So like consignment.
It was like a franchise. I mean, yeah.
But and real estate was their real estate, so you didn't have to take
right.
a lease.
Right. But you will have to pay 10%,
right.
you pay 8% commission yeah. on your sale.
Yeah.
So you're paying 8% commission on the sale. You're paying 6% in debt.
So you better sell some shoes.
Yeah, you better sell a lot of shoes. Yeah.
So what happened is I decided most of the people in North America were buying from wholesaler.
Right.
All the chain of stores were buying from wholesaler. And I decided, you know, that to start a business, I would do something different and eliminate the wholesaler, go directly to the factory and go like DTC.
Yeah, vertically integrated.
Completely integrated. And so that's why I decided to go to Italy. I visited a few factories and I was fortunate and lucky to meet like a great designer over there. And that's how I started, you know, building the clog. When I started the company,
right.
I said, how am I going to do? You know, you need to, you know, I've been hurt and I'm angry at my former boss.
Right.
And I want to show him that I can succeed.
Yeah.
I'm worried because are we going to have enough money to feed David and, mm-hmm. you know,
sure.
and the family and my wife? And my family, I wanted to make sure, that they were proud of me. And so you had all those movement, and I said, okay, I'm going to start that company with Le Château, but I'm going to make sure that it's very different. The business model will be different, that we're going to eliminate, you know, the wholesaler,
yeah.
but also, the company will be, I'm going to prove to my old employer and to my friend, to Charlie and IX, that it's possible to be a capitalist and still be a fair person and be a person, you know, that socially is socially minded and create something that can help the world and make the world a better place to be.
Wow.
And that's when, you know, that whole, the value of our company was created, the value of love, respect, and integrity. That, so when I hired my first employee,
yeah.
I would say, listen, Robert, there was Robert, there was Serge, there was,
yeah.
and I would say to them, I don't want you to lie to me. If one day you don't want to work, you know, or you're sick, or you want to help your wife.
Just tell me
yeah. about it, and you know, and let's work, let's do well, let's, you know, and basically explain to them, you know, our value of love, respect, and integrity.
But at the same time, you also were very ambitious. Like, you wanted to have a company that did good, that was socially responsible, that was thoughtful, mm-hmm. that had love, but you were also incredibly ambitious. I mean, the vertical integration, being able to basically design your own shoes, manufacture your own shoes, and then get it right to the hands of the end consumer.
And control the brand.
And control the entire brand. That was a very novel thing to do. I mean, very few companies did that. So the juxtaposition is, on one side, you're so ambitious, but on the other side, you want to build a different type of company.
Exactly.
And it's more humane.
And
exactly.
what I love about that is
exactly.
there's an integrity piece of it. I mean, you were angry at your former employer, and so that gave you, it sounds like it gave you energy to make sure
exactly.
you could do it better.
Exactly. It's all the energy that I had because I wanted to prove to them and, you know, that I could do it. Plus, I wanted, you know, to make sure that we could help, you know, everybody, and that everybody that would be with us would reach their full potential. What happened is that when we started with Le Chateau, it was Le Chateau. Then after a few years, we were doing well, and they started increasing our percentage rent. Instead of 8%, they went from 8 to 10 to 12 to 15. And then I went to Goyette, and I said, "Hey, how could you do that? You know, I cannot pay 15%, occupancy, and commission." And then I was afraid also, because at that point Le Chateau had very, very good season, then a poor season, a very good season, a poor season. So, and I was tributary to the traffic of Le Chateau.
Right.
I had to, if the people were not going inside, the store, they couldn't see my shoes.
Sure, of course. So eventually you opened up your first store?
I've opened my first store.
Where was that?
1980.
And where?
On St. Catherine.
On St. Catherine. Yeah. Near Le Chateau.
Next door.
Next to Le Chateau. Yeah, amazing. What chutzpah. I love it. It's great. And at this point, you're vertically integrated. You're making, you're designing,
that's
you're manufacturing.
Oh, yeah.
All
the way.
And you have the relationships at stores.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
This is a great time, actually, just to pause for a second.
So I couldn't open 30 stores. I didn't have the capital, or I didn't have, the location. I couldn't find them. So I had maybe 10 or 12 stores at that time, from 30 dropped to 10. Yeah.
Wow. So we're fascinated with the idea of chutzpah.
Yeah.
And what it means. What does chutzpah mean to you?
I guess it's a courage to make, there is key moment in life where you make those decision, and that it could go one way or another. And that's why quite often I always say, luck play a big role.
Sure.
And, I could think of chutzpah, like you said, is, when I made the decision to leave, my former employer, then leave Chateau, and there was other moment in my career that you had to make big decision. Like, for example, we used to sell not only Aldo, but we used to sell Dr. Martin in our store.
Which is a big brand in this time.
It was and we were doing extremely well. At one point, they told us that we were the second largest user or account after England.
Wow.
And
on the planet.
On the planet.
Incredible. Wow.
And we had a great relationship with them. And we even, our company designed some of the product that Dr. Martin is still carrying today.
Wow.
And we had a very, very close relationship. And they were very, very nice people too. And then they said, well, if Aldo is doing so well in Canada, maybe what we should do is that we should not only sell to him, but we should sell to
everybody. Of course.
And at the time, the only people they were selling to Neon and to ourselves, and that's it. And in fact, Neon was going through us to buy the shoes.
You were almost like a distributor for.
We were. So then they said we're going to open our own.
Right.
And we said no. And at that point, certain store, like we had store in Chicago, where 90% of our sales come from Dr. Martin rather than Aldo.
Wow. See, high stakes.
So you talk
for you.
About chutzpah.
Oh.
Yeah. I remember I was with my wife at a meeting with the Griggs, which owned Dr. Martin in Scotland, or in England, I should say. And there was also, what's his name now? Robert Greenberg, that was also selling in United States. Mm-hmm. And they had asked us to come and visit them, Dr. Martin. So they announced to us that they were going to open their own distribution in North America, in Canada and in the United States. Right. And we went to bed that night. And then in the morning, we told them, we said, listen, we don't want to buy anymore.
Wow. So that was one of your biggest products.
Yeah.
And because you didn't like what they were proposing, you
Correct.
Said.
Because
that's it.
Our business model was always going from factories to the, you know.
That was
and,
principle.
And if, you, if there were intermediaries, you didn't
yes.
want to do that.
Exactly.
I mean, were you scared? I would have been terrified.
I was very scared.
Yeah.
Very, very scared.
How did you not and listen so to that voice?
I know. So, yeah. you know, so we said no. And so then at that point, we decided, you know, like to stop working with them. And then the following morning, they came to us and they said, could you set up for 5 years a distributorship in Canada on our behalf?
Oh my God.
It would go through us. Mm-hmm. But it belonged to them, okay? And we said, okay, that fine. We could at least control where we were going to sell the
sure,
goods,
yeah.
and we were making a commission too, so sure. we accepted it. Same thing in the case of Robert Greenberg in the United States. And what he said no
oh.
too. And what did he do?
They gave it to you.
No. He started, he said, remember at that breakfast, he said, so Aldo, what are you going to do? I said, I'm just going to sell Aldo. And he said, he pulled a few sketches, you know, from his pocket. And he said, what do you think of those sketches? And I said, it looks pretty good. I mean, you know, like that style or that style.
Sure.
And he said, perfect. And that's how he founded Skechers.
Wow. So he founded Skechers because he didn't want to deal with Doc Martens anymore.
He didn't want to be in just
exactly.
another customer.
And
yeah.
so
yeah.
he decided he wanted to also be vertically integrated like
exactly.
you. And that's the beginning of Skechers.
And that's did right. you...
From those little Skechers.
That's unbelievable. Wow. I mentioned earlier when you walked in that we did some research to talk to some people that knew you well. And I got a chance to talk to Norm Jaskolka, who refers to you as his mentor. I mean, and I think you would agree with that. Norm worked for you for decades.
Yep.
And still does, I believe.
Yes.
And so... I asked Norm about your style of doing business, how you think about business and entrepreneurship. And he told me this story, and I love the story, and I want to ask you a little bit about it. He said he was opening up a store in a country in Europe that historically had been quite anti-Semitic. And he came to you and said, Aldo, I'm going to open up here, and here's sort of the business case for it. Here are the economics. We think it's a great idea. And you asked me, he said, Norm, should we do this given the history of anti-Semitism in this particular place? Yeah. And at that particular moment, Norm realized that you care about business, but you also deeply care about your people and integrity. And I'm wondering how much of that came from, like, where did that come from? Was it your family that taught you that? Like, where did that sense of, I can build good things and I can do it in a good way?
I think it came from my mom and my dad. I mean, you know, like, I remember in Morocco, we had, you know, like, my mom was always very, very kind, and my dad also, you know, with the people, with local people. And I guess it came from there. And also from the desire to be fair, to be just.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I remember Trudeau saying, let's create a just society, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, like, all of us, you know, we were socially minded, but we were capitalist,
yeah.
but socially minded, if you want. And I think it's that fairness, that desire to do good, to be a good human being, if you want.
Which is a concept that you in many ways pioneered, you know, going back to this idea of cause marketing. How did that come about? Like, where did you make the connection between I'm going to use my power as a businessman to raise awareness for AIDS and contribute to this cause?
To me, even our Jewish heritage,
right.
you know, like we are put on earth to fix the world, you know, like, you know, what was the name of that judge, Ginsburg,
right.
you know? And she said, you know, I'm there, you know, to fix the tear of our society.
Yeah.
And each one of us, you know, should make sure that whatever we can do to make the world a better place to be for each one of us. So I don't know.
You talk a little bit about you know, the connection of Judaism. One of the things David and I are fascinated with is...
What is it? It's Tikkun Olam.
Tikkun Olam, that's right, that's right.
Yeah.
But there is something unique about Jewish entrepreneurs. We've been thinking a lot about the fact that Jews in general are a very small percentage of the population, but there is something special about the Jewish plight, the Jewish ambition, and especially when it comes to entrepreneurship and creating businesses. And I'm curious, why do you think that's the case? Where does this sort of, this uniqueness that Jewish entrepreneurs have, whether it's building big companies or creating great social impact, where do you think that comes from?
Maybe, could it be because of anti-Semitism? Could it be because people criticize us so much that we want to prove to the rest of the world that, on the contrary, you know, we are there, you know, to have, you know, a big light torch, you know, that shine and that's beautiful, maybe.
There's sort of the survivalness,
yes,
you know, built inside
maybe.
Of us that
yeah.
we have something to prove, but we also want to survive.
That's right.
And entrepreneurship, it feels almost like it's baked into our DNA in some ways.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I find so fascinating.
Yeah.
We also think a lot
and
about...
And also because, maybe because of that, of anti-Semitism, we want to create like a bubble around us and create like something like... maybe, you know, like to dream, constantly to dream, and to keep dreaming and dreaming and dreaming and then executing yeah. in our dream.
So this is a time capsule in many ways. It's an archive of stories that we believe are there's timeless wisdom in. If someone were to pick up this recording 100 years from now,
yeah.
what lessons would you want them to take away from this?
Is to always position ourselves at a higher level and to keep dreaming and to dream and to act on our dream, but never even through failure. And like what you are saying, chutzpah, you know, to act
right.
on those, to continue dreaming. That yes, it's a black day, it's a horrible day, but you know, you get up in the morning and you said, no, I have to, you know, how would it be? How could I, you know, do it better? I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know about you, but when I sleep well at night, and when I go to sleep, my first thing is I dream of certain, you know, of certain thing. And so I always keep like nice thing in my head, if you want,
right.
as I'm falling asleep.
Do you have any regrets? Is there something you wish you would have done differently as you sort of reflect on some of those incredible milestones? Is there something you're like, that's one thing that I wish I had not done, and maybe that'll help us not do those things?
I don't have regrets.
Nice.
No, I don't have. I mean, to be honest, no, I don't have regret. I mean, I certainly make a lot of mistakes, and I certainly can improve myself as a human being. And sometimes, you know, like I said, hey, why are you doing that? It's wrong what you're doing. And I tried to correct it. And, but.
One of the people I spoke to had a pause when thinking about you and said, great entrepreneurs can make mistakes and recover from them. And that great entrepreneurs can make mistakes and recover from them.
Yeah.
And that's Aldo.
I'm proud of, you know, of what I'm doing. But the purpose is really to share, to, again, it's Tikkun Olam, is to,
right.
you know, to make the world better. And as a retailer, I realize that it's not only accounting that's going to help you being a good retailer, but it's psychology,
yep.
it's architecture, it's, you know, like all the various, you know, computer science. And I said, could you imagine if we could create a school that has all those various disciplines together, then you could form, you know, some great, you know, retailer. And that was basically the source of my gift to McGill.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Did your parents get a chance to see you be successful in retail?
Yeah.
And they, I imagine they thought very differently about it after that.
Yeah. I mean, at the time my dad passed away, I think at that time I had about 150 or 200 stores. Yeah. So it was very...
Did you ever talk about to him that you ended, after all this, he after was saying proud. You didn't want to go in the shoe business, you ended up in the shoe business?
Yes. Yeah. We used to laugh and definitely.
Do you want your kids? I know your son's in the business.
Yeah, David's in the business. The CEO.
Did you want that? Did you want your children to follow in the family business?
I love the company to continue, but I don't think I never pushed David or Douglas or Daniela to be, you know, in the business per se. I think I really want them to be happy. And in the case of David, you know, he joined us 22 years ago.
Wow.
And he became the CEO only 3 years, three, 4 years ago.
Amazing.
Are you still involved in the business?
What?
Are you still involved in the business?
Very much. Yeah. I love it.
Amazing.
I love it. Yeah.
What are you dreaming up these days?
Basically to continue, you know, like what we started as a company, because today it's not me anymore. I mean, yes, I am the sole shareholder, but all the people, you know, that work in the company are the one, you know, that make that company. And I think what's beautiful is to see in Saudi Arabia, you know, like coming to visit us to buy shoes, and they sitting at the same table as Israel or as, you know, whatever, you know. And so they talking and, you know, and then so what I'm proud is the fact of saying, you know, like the way colleagues and employees in Saudi or in Dubai or wherever or in, you know, Philippines are treating their co-worker inside their store in the same way as the way we treat them, with love, respect, and integrity. That way of treating human being in different part of the world, to me, makes the world a better place.
And that's the same way your father treated his employees.
Exactly.
In 1930
exactly.
in Morocco.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's
an amazing.
And I'm a strong believer that really, you really grow. You stand on the shoulder of your past and of your family.
Sure.
I really do believe.
And that's why Big Shot exists. We've been standing on the shoulders of giants like yours for a long time as we've sort of built our families and our businesses. Mm-hmm. And we are so grateful that you joined us for this
that's
archival.
Very kind of you.
And we hope that we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did, because it's been truly an honor to have you sit with us.
I hope it was useful.
It was amazing.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was incredible. When did you know you made it? I mean, all the success. There must have been a moment where you were like, I made it.
No, I didn't.
No?
There was never a moment? Actually, I do have one question, which is...
No, I haven't.
You haven't made it yet?
No. After all...
I'm very insecure. I guess it's that insecurity that you're talking about, you know, like entrepreneur.
Right.
Yeah.
Your mind, there's still more to do.
More to prove, maybe.
No, more to, would there be enough to be able, you know, to continue the standard of living that you have on a daily basis?
You still think about that?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I thought that was just us.
No.
We think about it all the time. So I will ask you this, though. Did you, after all this, after this incredible life, and life obviously continues for a long time, but did you ever meet or run into that original employer you had many years back who didn't give you the equity? Did you ever have an opportunity to sort of look that person in the eye and say, this could have been us together?
Right.
No, never? I did not. No, he passed away, unfortunately. And, but I have to say, honestly, he was a very, very nice man.
Sure.
I guess, you know.
He just made a mistake.
Yes, I think so.
I think so,
too.
Yeah.
It's clear he made a mistake.
I think it's pretty obvious he made a mistake.
Because you could have built this empire with him.
Definitely.
As opposed to competing with him.
Or maybe The reason I bet is because I was alone. I don't know.
It's an incredible story. It's an incredible story of not just business and entrepreneurship, but family and values and integrity. And
but Harley, I have a question for you. You know, I made an investment in a nice little company in the States, and it's operating mostly on it's direct to consumer, and it's on the on the internet.
Yeah.
Okay. And I realized they work with Spotify.
Shopify.
Oh, Shopify. Yeah. So maybe I should talk to you and find out what kind of fees you're charging.
Sure. Always looking for a deal. This is perfect.
Exactly.
So wait a second. This whole setup, by the way, is just to get a discount on Shopify fees.
Exactly.
That's great.
That's amazing. Well, we can talk about that. Yes, that's good. Yeah, I'll do. Thank you so much. It's such an honor.
That was an honor.
Thank you very much.
Amazing. Good. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my own.